It's essential that when companies disseminate material non-public information, they do so fairly to all investors. And their point is that if I was a follower of this CEO, I would get that information. But let's say I'm an investor of DraftKings, but I don't follow.
Yeah, what, you're a major investor. You're hanging out over a Blue Sky. You're not even on X anymore. You're never going to know.
But I'm so curious, like, what counts as announcing something publicly?
Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that brings together financial reporting, sustainability, audit, and risk teams like a mug of warm cider while snuggled up under a thick blanket next to a roaring fire. I'm your intrepid host of today, podcast provocateur and recovering cherry coke addict Mike Gravano. With me, as always, are Catherine Tsai and Steve Soder, who I'll let introduce themselves. Catherine, over to you.
I'm a professional asker of questions, and I like to drink venti soy chais.
And I'm an accountant and Diet Coke aficionado. Looking forward to debuting a great conversation and excited for today's episode.
Me too. This is the season finale, season six. We're coming to an end, and this will be our last episode for 2024. I almost forgot what year it was because I have been thinking 2025 so much. That would, if I blinked and said, and this is the last episode for 2025, what happened in that year? We have been incredibly busy recording live shows at events. And so inevitably there have been topics that we have not yet had a chance to dive into on the show. So today, what we're going to do before we go on hiatus is we're going to do a speed round covering all sorts of things. You guys excited?
Yes.
I'm ready.
Yeah, we're pumped.
Let's do it.
Okay, so in no particular order, there were some recent penalties on cybersecurity disclosures. We will start with that one. But there was some social media posting by the CEO of DraftKings that got a little bit of hot water. The PCOB suggested questions for audit committees to consider, which if you're an auditor, you might expect to have to consider these yourself. And the SEC is going to completely change the way that security and access are authenticated when companies and individuals file with the SEC. It's actually a really big change. So,
heck yeah.
Yeah, we can get right to it.
What topic do you want to start with first?
All right, well, let's start with SolarWinds. We kind of covered this a little bit in our conversation with Matt Kelly recently at Amplify. If you haven't heard that episode, would suggest you check it out. But just to get you up to speed, SolarWinds is a major technology and software provider used by a lot of companies, and hackers were able to gain access to SolarWinds customers through some faulty security. Won't get too much into the details, but the SEC had something to say about it. Now, there were some penalties to SolarWinds themselves, but what's interesting here is that the SEC actually fined four companies, specifically in the one that I'm looking at, because their disclosures weren't up to date because they suffered from the SolarWinds hack. And that's a little bit interesting. This is not like a cybersecurity thing. It's actually a disclosure thing.
Okay. So the SEC was basically saying what? Their disclosures weren't good enough or just not up to date enough?
Yeah. So you can go through the you can actually go through the finding. But basically what they said in a nutshell is that these companies were disclosing risks due to cybersecurity as being more hypothetical when they actually knew that the vulnerability and the breach had taken place.
So if they didn't know and they're like, hypothetically, this could happen, then that they'd probably be in a good position, right? But because they knew it had happened and were saying it's just hypothetical?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's always the question, right? Is like, okay, well, if it had happened, but you didn't know that it happened, so at the time that you made that disclosure, like, did you truly not know? It's kind of back to the whole Watergate, like, what did you know and when did you know
right.
it? But one of the things that the SEC has talked about repeatedly is like, look, you can't disclose something as hypothetical as like, hey, this might happen. If there is anywhere in kind of your chain of information or a command where somebody has raised a point, say, hey, look, this thing actually might have happened and it might be pretty serious. And that's why these companies were fined.
Yeah, it feels like such a covering. You guys like that? I'm not going to swear on the show. To say, oh, it might have happened. When you know, they're like, look, there had to be a backroom conversation where like, look, we can't just ignore it. So we're going to say, hypothetically, maybe that could have happened, and that is a risk. And it feels like you got halfway there, and you just own up to what happened, because that's not on you. You got hacked. That happens.
Well, in these companies' defense, let's say there's these SEC reporting teams that are putting the disclosures together. It sounds like they would have to have some sort of like line of communication with the IT team to be able to tell them, hey, there's this new threat that emerged. It's probably going to affect what you're going out to the street and telling the street. So in other words, like, there needs to be some sort of communication between these various teams so that the disclosures are accurate. Because you tell me, but if you're on an SEC reporting team, how often do you hear about hacks?
Probably not as often as you should. And Mike, your point is correct if it worked that way.
Right.
But what actually happens with these disclosures is that the SEC reporting team, but probably more your inside counsel and your outside counsel, are actually thinking through what are called risk factors, which are these kind of general things that say, hey, in our business, these are the types of risks that we might be subject to. And that's kind of a standing sort of list of disclosures that kind of like hangs out there to give you a little bit of protection so that if in the future it does happen and your investors said, hey, wait a minute, you know, this really bad thing happened, why didn't you tell me about it? The company could be like, well, look, we at least disclosed this as a possible risk and now it has happened. And so what probably went on in this case is that these companies had a generic risk about cybersecurity, and those didn't get updated. To your point, Catherine, that information probably didn't make its way all the way back to the SEC reporting team. Now, ultimately, that would probably come through legal. And my guess actually is what happened behind the scenes is that the companies knew about it, hadn't concluded on how material it was, and until they had made that conclusion, decided, hey, look, I don't want to change my disclosure. But hindsight is 2020, so when the SEC looks at all of this and says, hey, wait a minute, somebody in your IT team brought this up as this thing had actually happened, it didn't make it all the way to the to an updating your disclosures. Whether or not you decided it material didn't matter, that was no longer a hypothetical risk. What
Right.
you probably should have done is updated the disclosure to say, hey, we have had hacks. We're evaluating whether or not they're material, probably like that kind of thing.
Okay, you read my mind because I was going to ask, can you say that, like, this happened, we don't know the materiality yet, we're working on it, see you next time.
Well, and actually, back to some of the new cybersecurity disclosures that were passed a couple of years ago, that's actually what a lot of companies have been doing, but that's not sitting buried in a Form 10Q or a 10K. That's actually now in an 8K, which is a little more obvious place to put it, let's just say, and a lot of companies have done just that.
Nice.
Yeah, to be conservative, hey, we've had this thing happen, but we're still trying to figure out whether or not it's material.
So to wrap up, if you're a company that has been through some sort of breach, what should be your next step before you make any sort of update in your 10Q or 10K or
yeah.
any sort of 8K disclosure?
Well, you're going to need a broad team of, a broad team of stakeholders, cross-functional team within the company to get together and be able to talk about, like, hey, this thing happened. Have we done a materiality analysis? What does financial reporting think? What does internal audit and risk think? What does legal think? What does IT think? Hey, let's get this all together. I mean, you can't do that in a vacuum. And actually, we published a blog up all about the new cybersecurity rule and actually the need for cross-functional teams to get together. So would encourage people to check that out.
We'll drop a link in our show notes.
In the show notes.
There you go. All right, so let's move on to the next one, which is DraftKings. This one is, I don't want to say it's funny because, like, it kind of sucks when this stuff happens, but this is an unforced error, I would say. In this case, basically, the CEO was posting to his personal X account, talked about really strong growth that was coming up, which I'm sure he thought that that was a generic enough disclosure, but mm-hmm. the SEC disagreed, said, hey, that's material non-public information, and cited him with a Reg FD disclosure, which basically meant you didn't go through the proper channels to disclose stuff.
So just tweeting things out is not the proper channels for disclosures?
Well, if it's on an official company, Twitter, X, or social media handle, that's certainly a lot better than doing it personally.
Is it the word growth? Is that if he was like, we're doing great, guys, would they have been able to slap him with that? Or is it the strong growth? Is that like an official term? Is that why?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. And actually, in the SEC's filing, it says, information about growth in sales as a public company can be extremely important to investors. It's essential that when companies disseminate material non-public information, they do so fairly to all investors. And their point is that if I was a follower of the CEO, I would get that information. But let's say I'm an investor of DraftKings, but I don't follow.
Yeah. Yeah, what, you're a major investor. You're hanging out over in Blue Sky. You're not even on X anymore. You're never going to know.
But I'm so curious, like, what counts as announcing something publicly? I went and looked on the X account for the DraftKings CEO. He has 28,000 followers. Is that not enough people to be like saying that you're publicly disseminating information.
Well, it's a fair point, and candidly, we ought to bring one of our friends like Alan Wilson or others who probably knows the legality of a little bit better. But what I can say is that in practice in financial reporting, you know, what you need to do is file an 8K. It actually gets back to the form where you need to disclose material cybersecurity incidents, back to our previous conversation. If it's material, then it needs to be disclosed to everybody, and the channel that the SEC has indicated for you to do that is a Form 8K. And actually, it goes back to material non-public. So we've talked about a non-public disclosure, which in this case, the SEC felt like it was that post. But then the question is it material? And what the SEC is saying here with that statement about growth, hey, anytime you're talking about growth, yes, that's absolutely material. So a CEO could be like, hey, things are going great. We're excited to talk about it on our next earnings call. I'm assuming that that would probably be just fine. But in this case, you talk about growth. Hey, that's a really big deal. Probably is material. And again, because it was on his personal X handle, it was not considered public enough, even with 28,000 followers.
Okay, and a follow-up question. In the news release from the SEC, it talks about how actually it was a public relations firm that tweeted this out.
Okay, that bit I didn't get.
And actually, the company caught it, and they're like, oh, make the sound.
Oh, there it is.
And they said, please pull it back. And then later, when they actually did their public disclosure for financial earnings, that's when they, you know, quote unquote, publicly disclosed. So what if they had just left it up? Would they have still gotten in trouble? Like, what if they had never told the PR firm, pull it back, because it's already out there to 28,000 people. If we leave it up, it's still, in theory, available to anybody who comes on his account. Versus, you know, went out to the few people who saw it when it was live, and now those people have that information and nobody else does, because they're the only ones who saw it.
So you're asking, is the cover-up, did the cover-up, I say that in air quotes, did that make it worse?
Right.
Again, you know, I think an attorney would probably speak to this a little better than I can. I'm guessing that the SEC would still take exception to it. What I think probably would have been the right call is for them to actually publish an 8K and said, you know, our CEO made these comments on a Twitter handle. This is what they are. You know, we plan to discuss this in more detail in our upcoming earnings call. That probably would have been the safer bet. The one key about that is if you are going to publish an 8K, you only have a certain period of time in order for you to do that after the statement was made. So let's say that the company said, hey, PR firm, you shouldn't have done this. You need to pull it back. But that happens, you know, let's say like a week later. That's probably not going to be good enough. If you're going to publish an 8K, you got to be with like 24 to 48 hours. And there's some specific timing about that. So you got to act quick.
So in that 8K, though, if they had done it within the correct amount of time, they could have, the tweet becomes part of the disclosure.
Correct.
Got it.
Correct. Again, I would assume that's going to be enough. Sounds like we need to get some attorneys back here to maybe dig a little bit deeper into this. But posting it on your personal kind of handle, clearly that type of information, obviously a bad idea.
I think the best advice we can give without an attorney on the show right now is just get off social media. Just delete your account. It's touch grass. It'll be better for everybody.
All right. Well.
Okay. Fair enough.
Is that too much of my personal opinion?
No, I think it's good.
What's next?
Yeah.
When your annual reports need to be right and ready for assurance, that's when you need Workiva. Meet new regulatory requirements without burning out your teams by automating the most tedious parts of financial and non-financial reporting. Learn why teams are switching to Workiva at workiva.com/accounting. That's workiva.com/accounting.
Okay, what's next? So the third thing, as I mentioned, the PCAOB. Now, this is the oversight board that regulates public accounting firms, so the auditors. And just to provide a little more background, the SEC actually regulates the PCAOB. It's the PCAOB that regulates auditors. But they published this thing they're calling an audit committee resource. It's been a while since this has been out, so it's not exactly new. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that they gave a list of questions that audit committees should be asking their auditors. So, like, for example, and they actually have, like, a long list. Again, we should probably put this in the show notes. People be interested. So did the auditor identify any new risks? How did the auditor gain a sufficient understanding of the business and management's strategy? What did the auditor do to test, you know, relevant controls so on and so forth. And again, if I'm an auditor, you probably ought to be looking at this kind of resource, whether you're an internal auditor or an external auditor, in order to be prepared to, you know, respond to these kind of questions from your audit committee.
Did any of these questions surprise you, Steve?
I wouldn't say surprising. I mean, this is a pretty fulsome list. I mean, I've attended a fair share of audit committee meetings, and I've never observed the auditors getting like grilled in this way. And maybe that's happening outside, you know, outside my purview, at least when I was there. I just think it's a really, really long list. And the thing that what this really tells me is that, yes, auditors should be prepared to respond to these questions. But it's actually the PCAOB is really saying, hey, auditors, these are the things that you need to be thinking about. And we've been trying to tell you this stuff for years, but because you don't seem to be getting it, now we're actually going to talk to the people who are supposed to be holding you accountable, which is your clients, and their audit committees. So, okay, that's also how we're going to be sure that you're thinking about these things.
I see there's a whole section on cybersecurity.
There is a whole section on cybersecurity, actually right back to what we were talking about a moment ago.
And is it the kind of thing, should they be prepared to answer, or are they also saying, like, clients, are they going through those lists with their auditors, like, the audit is done, did you do this question, or is it a smattering, do we think, a buffet from the questions?
No, I think a lot of these, I mean, certainly some are more applicable than others, but I actually think, like, hey, we're getting ready to wrap up the audit. Because generally speaking, when you're kind of concluding an audit, there's going to be a presentation to the audit committee because there's going to be an annual report associated with that, which the audit committee is going to need to approve in order for that to be published or certainly filed if it's a public company. And I think these are the types of things that an audit committee ought to be asking, like, hey, auditor, did you think about this? Did you do this? How did you get comfortable with that? Yeah, I mean, to me, this is like, hey, auditors, you got to be prepared to respond to this, or be able to clearly and conclusively demonstrate, hey, you're asking this question, but it's not applicable, and here's how we got comfortable with that.
Sure.
There's a section on digital assets too. That's the only
right.
Yeah, that's the only other thing I was gonna highlight.
Is that like NFTs?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, yes.
That is a digital asset.
That is a digital asset. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, auditors have been under a lot of pressure and a lot of heat from regulators for a long time. As I said, this isn't just coming from a regulator. This is kind of the regulator basically like going around and actually wanting that same heat to be put upon those auditors by their clients.
Sure.
Nice.
And very last is EDGAR Next. So for those listeners who may not be familiar, when you submit something to the SEC, it's done through a system called EDGAR. In the past, you would have to have like a login to EDGAR, and candidly, the controls weren't that great. Probably wouldn't have been too difficult to hack into that. I mean, I've never tried, but I have maintained those credentials as part of my job, and always kind of felt like that security was maybe a little bit lacking, and clearly the SEC did too. So now you're going to need to use this login.gov, which is kind of like the federal government sort of like master password login system or whatever. You're going to need to have credentials for each individual person. And this applies to everybody. So you might be on the board of directors and you might need to file like your own forms when you get stock or that kind of a thing. And so this really impacts everybody. It's a boost to security, but this is going to impact every single SEC filer.
Wow.
That's Qs and Ks. That's 8Ks. That's Form 4s, Section 16, financial services. I mean, it's the whole deal.
And the SEC has had a couple webinars for filers so that they know what to do. Workiva also has had some, and there's some helpful information about like what you need to do between now and March 25th to be ready for all of these changes later in 2025.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Would encourage people to check out the resources. A third thing that we can put in the show notes.
Steve, before we get out of here, do you want to almost swear so I use the record scratch for you? I just didn't want you to feel left out.
Are we recording right now? Because I am so mad that you didn't give me the opportunity earlier. That's a roundup. Again, no particular order, but these are kind of things that certainly piqued my interest and certainly things to stay on top of.
Yeah, thanks so much for bringing it to the table and sharing with us, and of course, our listeners, which thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Mike Rabagno. That was Catherine Tsai and Steve Sutter, and this has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva.
Please subscribe, leave a review, and darn it, by golly, tell your buddies if you like the show. If you're watching this on YouTube, please tell us what you think in the comments or send us a note at offthebooks@wikiva.com. I'm doing this from memory. Usually we have this in front of us.
Well, we'll see you next season.
Yeah, we'll be back next year with season 7 of Off the Books, so look out for more stories about all the things you know and love that we deliver. Until then, surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.